Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rusty, and this is Sherringford's Table Talk, the podcast about the lives and times of fictional detectives. What have we learned so far about the world of hard-boiled and noir fiction? We know that the climate is harsh, that corruption and manipulation influence many aspects of life, and we've come to understand that there are only a handful of individuals who have what it takes to withstand these influences. In the last episode, I've told you a little bit about one of these chosen individuals, Philip Marlowe. I tried to explain to you not only how he managed to maintain a steady moral compass, but also what toll it's taken on him to do so. Marlowe has soft spots. He has certain inner romantic values that can also be labeled as his philosophy or ethical guidelines or a moral compass. Regardless their name, they have saved him from giving in to his society's influences and losing parts of his humanity in the process. Throughout his career, he has remained to be known as an incorruptible but inevitably tragic detective. He has shaped this distinct character of the private investigator who is tough on the outside, but who is also constantly accompanied by an air of melancholy and sadness. Try to hold this image in your mind, because in today's episode, we will compare it with two of crime fiction's other famously hard-boiled detectives. Two guys who are a few steps deeper in the swamp of corruption and violence. They haven't sunken yet, but they also definitely didn't retain a, what you can call, objective view from the outside. To stick with this metaphor, it is safe to say that they have already a lot of dirt in and on their shoes. A lot more than Philip Marlowe, at least. That's for certain. Episode 13 at Sherringford's Table Talk. Sam Spade and Mike Hammer. On the surface, Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe seem to have a lot in common. They're both tough private eyes who are active during approximately the same era, America in the 1930s. Accordingly, both of them have similar living habits and dressing styles. They both smoke and drink regularly, and they both wear heavy suits and fedoras. Famously also, both of them have been portrayed by Humphrey Bogart on the silver screen, but that is pretty much all, and we've reached the point where their similarities end. Even Bogart's depiction of the two detectives is already only physically accurate for Philip Marlowe, and that's also only true if we ignore the obvious height differences between the two. After all, Marlowe, with his 6'2" body, was close to a giant for his time. Bogart, on the other hand, reportedly often had to wear plateau shoes on set in order to be able to look his female colleagues in the eyes. Nevertheless, Bogart and Marlowe shared the same facial features and the same hair and eye color. Sam Spade, on the other hand, looks completely different, and there is also not a lot of room for interpretation because his physical appearance is described in full detail at the beginning of the first chapter of the novel The Maltese Falcon. I quote, "Samuel Spade's jaw was long and bony, his chin a jutting V under the more flexible V of his mouth. His nostrils curved back to make another, smaller V. His yellow-green eyes were horizontal. The V motif was picked up again by thickish brows rising outward from twin creases above a hooked nose, and his pale brown hair grew down from high flat temples in a point on his forehead. He looked rather pleasantly, like a blond Satan." End quote. This detailed description of Sam Spade's face that's presented to us from a very early point in the story sends a message to us. We are practically warned, in a sense, to not take this character lightly. This is not your typical story's hero. In fact, Sam Spade would be best regarded as an anti-hero. A lot of his facial features serve as direct first hints to his personality. Sam Spade is rough, tough, and immoral. His features are hard. Most of them are cutting, confronting V's, indicating that hitting him could hurt you more than it would hurt him. His appearance is described as almost comically harsh, and the last sentence labeling him as a devil just rounds up this general image, and it works like a signature for a rather brutal and dangerous man. Sam Spade also has no backstory. There is no deep past. All we know about him is what we are presented with through his actions. He's supposed to be a man of the present, and by today's standards, he is a pretty flat character. He lacks all of Marlowe's more interesting and human personality traits, and he reminds you more of a classical old-school spaghetti western character than of a detective. Despite Spade having a seemingly unfamiliar aura for a detective, his debut novel, The Maltese Falcon, which was written by the author Dashiell Hammett, is considered a jewel of crime fiction literature. The story even ranked number 10 in the top 100 crime novels of all time list that was published by the Crime Writers Association in 1990. Spade's performance in the story, however, is unfortunately the only time that he has ever appeared in a full-length novel. He's overall only featured in four more lesser-known short stories after that, and it partly explains why there is so little information about his personal details. His enigmatic persona, however, is also partly created that way on purpose. We are supposed to be more distant to the character in order to focus more on the story, and once again on Spade's actions. As I indicated before, Sam Spade finds himself to be a much bigger part of the times he lives in than Marlowe did. His many not-so-nice actions are direct indicators for the influences his work, his clients, and his environment have had on him. I will start off by telling you that Sam Spade is a man. And I thereby not only refer to his biological gender, but also to his stereotypical attitude and character. He is what can only be described best as hyper-masculine. His already very rough face is rounded up by a very rough 6-foot frame that is described as quote-unquote almost conical. He has big hands and thick fingers, which he uses to not only lay a beating on everyone who looks for it, but also to roll and light his own cigarettes. And that is something that is explicitly described around 20 times in The Maltese Falcon alone. Each occasion functions as a symbol for Spade being unfazed by great immediate danger. Someone betrays him, Spade casually rolls a cigarette. Someone puts a gun on his head, Spade casually rolls a cigarette. Just like the badass he is, Sam Spade reacts most of the time exactly as we would expect a character like that to react. In addition to his almost superhuman mental toughness, Sam Spade is also the smartest man in the room for most of the story. His physicality may be a part or even an initiator for many altercations in the novel, but we never get the feeling that Spade is a brainless thug. Quite the contrary, even. Many times throughout The Maltese Falcon, Spade seems to be above every conflict or problem that unfolds before him. We witness him one time to lose control with a beautiful woman. We see him sleep with her, make her breakfast, only to betray her the very next second. Another time, Spade lays a beating on someone because he was lied to, only to admit a few pages later that he knew that he was lied to all along. One time he promises to help his client, the next moment he considers accepting a bribery that would force him to change his directions completely, just because it was a lot of money. If Marlowe is known for having a steady moral compass, Spade's compass needle jumps randomly to wherever it feels like. He can hardly be called a nice person, and his personal agenda seems to be very opportunistic and it only strives towards his own personal advantage. Unsurprisingly, Spade treats others with cynicism and he distrusts most of what he's told. On several occasions, he seems to be amused by people trying to lie to him or put on an emotional show. Just like Marlowe, it is pretty much impossible to manipulate Samuel Spade or to get through to him even. The reason for that is just very different. Spade's belief in the good of humanity is not really existent. He constantly expects others to lie to him, betray him, or even attack him when they have the chance. On a more unrealistic side of his character, we never see Spade to struggle with any of that, even though he also has very little closer relationships to give him support. To put it more drastically even, the general concepts of friendship and love seem to be rather unknown to Spade, and he treats the people close to him not very differently than he treats his enemies or his clients. During the introduction to Spade's life and his detective office, we get to know his partner Miles and his secretary Effie. Effie and Spade seem to have an eye for each other, and Spade initially treats her well. Only a few pages later, though, we find out that Spade actually sleeps with his partner's wife, and he constantly ignores and even ridicules Effie's critique about it all. Spade brushes it off, knowing that Effie will stay by his side anyway. His carelessness makes the women of his time being drawn to him even more, and he cares even less about them in the process. Now, besides this obviously toxic treatment of women, Spade also uses all kinds of other unmoral and negative actions to reach his personal goal. He fights, he steals, he lies, and he bribes himself to the solution of the case. And he distrusts, manipulates, and beats down others who try to do the same to him. Sticking to a vague, the end justifies the means morale, Sam Spade is much less heroic than Marlowe, and he appears to have the purpose to simply impress us with his sheer, endless manly superiority. The driving force for Sam Spade is hopeless cynicism towards his world. All what gave Marlowe an edge of moral righteousness is ridiculed and brushed off by Spade. Unfortunately, we, the readers, never receive any explanation that could reduce the tension that many of Spade's actions produce, and at least for the Maltese Falcon, it seems that it is how it's supposed to be. After all, Sam Spade portrays the man who can shoulder it all, the man who never fails, and the man who is not afraid of anything. As negative as these flat traits appear today, Spade was a form of admired anti-hero back then, and probably also a cool role model for many little boys. Is he a great detective choice considering his world's circumstances? Absolutely. Is he a very realistic detective, or should he be taken as a symbol for how to face adversity? Absolutely not. But just like Phil Marlowe, Sam Spade has enriched the detective character by another prototype. The smug, cynical, unfaithful, but nonetheless genius Private Eye. So, if you've enjoyed this episode, please consider... What is going on? What's this music? Why can't I click it? What?
Hey, honey, it's Mike Hammer.
Mike, how did you...
I didn't call you, remember? You called me.
That's true, but I don't understand.
You don't understand, huh? Well, then I'll tell you.
Wait. Is it because I forgot to tell your story? I'm sorry, okay?
Now don't lie to me!
Okay, I will start right away, Mr. Hammer, sir. If you could please turn down the music and maybe sit in the next room. Thank you. God, this guy is intense and scary. Okay. So, what can I tell you about Mike Hammer? If we would imagine our detectives to be lined up along a scale measuring extreme actions and intensity paired with maybe dark storytelling and violence, we would find earlier detectives like Poirot, Miss Marple, and Holmes on the left side of the scale, and private investigators from the 1930s onward more towards the right side of the scale. We would see Marlowe being closer to the middle, we would then go over to Spade, who is a little bit more to the right, and eventually, after a lot of scrawling to the very right ending of the scale, we would land by Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. Mike is the top of the hill when it comes to toughness. While Marlowe and Spade are hard-boiled cynics, Mike Hammer is just a hard man. He's in no connection to any of the former gentleman detectives. He lets his fists and his trusty .45 automatic do all the talking. Mike Hammer is closer to a vigilante than he is to a detective. Marlowe and Spade use tricks, manipulation, knowledge of the psychology of their people in order to work a case. Hammer just kicks in doors, brutally beats down suspects, slaps and whips women if necessary, and straight up kills murderers after he's convinced of their guilt. Driven by an intense hatred of crime, Hammer is on a personal vendetta mission to find and execute criminals. Why bother bringing someone to court when you can be your own judge? That's the Hammer mentality. If you want to get a better understanding of what an average Mike Hammer novel is all about, you won't have to look any further than Mickey Spillane's first book. The story, with the fitting title, I, the Jury, contains everything you would look for in terms of Mike Hammer plots. Finding himself on the personal mission to avenge the death of a former army friend, Hammer works his way through the dirt of New York's criminal underworld, ready to kill the killer as soon as he will get to him. In many ways, Mike Hammer reminds you of an early version of Marvel Comics' anti-hero The Punisher. Similar to Frank Castle, Hammer serves his own justice on crime, and he also comes from a military background, having fought in the war between America and Japan. Also similar to The Punisher, Mike Hammer respects the police, as he's convinced that they do righteous but hard work, and he kind of tries to remain within their guidelines as good as he can, but most of the time he quickly realizes that his own way is the more efficient one, and then he's also very quick to emphasize why he prefers to not be constantly bound by the general law. Any hard, gritty guy fits Mike Hammer, because his actual appearance is never mentioned in the novels, and we are primarily confronted with the story plots, Mike's inner thoughts, and his brutal actions. The Hammer novels all contain graphic depictions of violence and nudity, so they're very far away from being children's safe content. Very unlike Sam Spade, Mike is definitely not above of what unfolds before him. He's much rather too entangled too quickly, as he loses his temper often about the crimes he faces, and he finds himself shortly after to be about to live out his rage on the next criminal he can find. On a very unrealistic note, however, Mike Hammer's drastic actions remain without consequences for most of the time. They're either labeled as righteous, or they're just being downplayed as part of the brutal times he lives in. The only thing that really reminds you about a typical detective is that Mike has his own detective office, and he also has a secretary called Velda, who's also his personal love interest. Just like Sam Spade before him, Hammer and Velda are on very loose terms, even though they appear to be a team. Whenever another pretty thing expresses her interest, Hammer is the last guy to turn her down. In Mike's world, there is just a very subjective bad and good, black and white. No room for gray zones whatsoever. Velda is good, And Hammer's old police buddy Pat Chambers is good. The criminal scum who just robbed an old lady, straight shot in the head is all what he deserves. To sum it up, Mike Hammer is a typical noir detective. If you remember the short definition I gave you about the differences between hard-boiled and noir fiction, you might see why that's the case. While hard-boiled fiction changed the rules and played more often with moral ambiguity and blurring borders between heroes and villains, noir fiction is much more fascinated with the dark side. Everyone can fall, every good guy can become the villain, and right and wrong are neither clear nor often attainable at all. Now, an interesting, but lastly also logical problem which Mike Hammer as a character had to face for many years was that it seemed impossible to portray him earnestly on film or radio. While there have been many attempts in both media fields, and despite some depictions coming closer than others, fans of the Spillane novels were overall never satisfied. Earlier movies and shows had the problem that drastic portrayals of sex and violence, as it is the case in the books, would have caused an outrage. In the later times, there just wasn't enough interest in the novels anymore, as they had already lost their initial shock factor. Now, I personally would love to see a truthful movie about Mike Hammer, and I think that maybe directors like Tarantino could achieve this goal easily, but maybe I'm also very biased and Mike Hammer's time is just over. Since he's also a very flat character, that is pretty much everything I can tell you about him without spoiling anything from the books. So we've reached the end of this episode rather quickly. Nonetheless, I hope that you have enjoyed this episode, and also that Mr. Hammer has left the building by now. In any case, if you did enjoy it, please think about leaving a review wherever you can and consider subscribing. And you can also tell your friends and your family about the podcast to help me reach a bigger audience. Lastly, if you cannot have enough detective content in your life, you can join me on Instagram under sharingforts_table_talk. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much for listening, and I wish you a pleasant day.